Bigfoot bashing credit cards in Portland, and in Alaska, they're cutting up credit cards with chainsaws, and people on rocking chairs here in D.C. That's the kind of response that we need from people all over the world, because, look, otherwise it's just words on paper. Everybody's heard it at this point. Everybody understands that we're in a desperate fix. The good news, and this really is the good news, that fix is no longer necessary in any way. We live now on a planet where the cheapest way, all of a sudden, to generate power is to point a sheet of glass at the sun. The only reason we're not making change fast is because, as our colleague from Mozambique points out so beautifully, it's in the interest of the fossil fuel industry to keep digging stuff up and setting it on fire. We don't need to. The good Lord hung a large ball of burning gas 93 million miles up in the sky, and we now know how to make full use of it, and we could. That's what we're pushing for today, a dramatic change in investment away from coal and gas and oil and towards sun and the wind and the batteries to store them when the sun goes down and the wind drops. That's our future if we choose to seize it. If we don't, then every grim line on those graphs in that UN report is going to come to life and haunt our kids for their entire lives.
Vangelis, I'm wondering if you can take us on a through line from the IPCC warning today. Back to when you began as a journalist in Mississippi covering Cancer Alley, through to East Palestine, where we see this massive dump of chemicals from the fossil fuel industry and this train derailment contaminating an entire community. How this all links to climate change?
You know, the biggest subsidies in the history of our country of industry has been our government's willingness to declare most places and most people, all people of color and, frankly, most white people, too, because most white people are working class or poor, as disposable. And you see it in places like Mississippi. You see it in places like the Gulf Coast of Alabama. When I was a young reporter at the Jackson Advocate newspaper, I was covering the destruction of a community in Columbia, Mississippi, and a group down there called Jesus People Against Pollution that had been formed because a factory that was producing Agent Orange had blown up back in the era of the Vietnam War. And when they cleaned up the chemicals, they put them into 55-gallon steel drums and they buried them in the water table. And here we were 30 years after that, 25 years after that, and kids had tumors, had cancerous tumors over them. You would go not far from there to a pulp mill, and you would see on the way all the forests that were being clear cut. And when you got to the pulp mill, what was coming out so oxidized the cars that if you rubbed your hand across the hoods of the cars, it looked like a Jackson Pollock painting. The paint was just peeling off the cars because what was coming out of that pulp mill. Well, the same thing was going into these kids' respiratory system. So the little kids, their noses just ran all day. And you knew that was because there was caustic chemicals. And what this all speaks to at the end of the day is what Bill's talking about, is our country's addiction to using, frankly, dangerous petrochemicals in ways that we really don't need to be using them, transporting them in ways that are extremely unsafe, as you see in East Palestine. But it also speaks to our country's addiction, quite frankly, to burning stuff in order to power our country, which is ridiculous. Honestly, it's a better deal for the people of this country if we power our country through renewables on multiple levels. It's healthier, absolutely. It's healthier for the climate. It creates more jobs here. It keeps more money in people's pocket. This Inflation Reduction Act has given us a massive amount of capital to actually build the economy of the future. We are within sight of building an economy where we are creating more jobs, frankly, sustaining the planet, than destroying its places and destroying its people, than destroying the planet itself. And what we need the banks to do is to do what they do when they're at their best, which is to bet on a better future for all of us. Right now, they're betting against all of us by continuing, frankly, to finance our expanding addiction to oil and gas right when it should be shrinking.
Bill, you're right. It took decades to force banks to abandon racist redlining. We don't have decades to avert catastrophic climate acts. We just recently came from the UN climate summit in Egypt and Sharm el-Sheikh. There, you're not allowed to protest inside the COP without permission. Now you're protesting outside the banks, cutting up your credit cards. Your new group is called the Third Act, Old and Bold. What is the third act that you will be taking on around climate change?
Well, the Third Act recognizes that young people have been providing the climate leadership. Young people and people from frontline communities, indigenous communities, what they lack sometimes is the structural power to force change at the pace that we need. Older people have structural power coming out our ears. There's 70 million Americans over the age of 60. That is a sleeping giant. That's more people than live in France, and multiply it by some factor because we all vote. There is no known way to stop old people from voting. And not only that, we ended up with a lot of the resources. The boomers and the silent generation have something like 70% of the country's financial assets. So if you want to push around Washington or Wall Street, it's probably good to have a few people with hairlines like mine. And in the last year since we've started Third Act, Amy, people have been showing up everywhere. And now they're building beautiful coalitions with the Sierra Club, with Stop the Money Pipeline, with all our other partners. There's 50 groups, including youth from all over the country, the Sunrise Movement and Fridays for the Future. I just heard from Greta Thunberg overnight saying, good luck and go for it. Everybody's pitching in to make today the beginning of a big campaign to hold capital really accountable. Look, this is a overwhelming force in the life of the world, as we've learned in the last couple of weeks watching these bank escapades. We need them acknowledging risk of all kinds, financial risk, and also the overwhelming risk to our planet, our species, our civilization that comes in the form of climate change. We need them to remember that the economy is a subset of the earth and not the other way around. If we can get that message through, if we can remind people today of the connection between cash and carbon, literally, somebody who has $125,000 in those banks is producing more money because it's being lent out for pipelines and frack wells than all the cooking, flying, heating, driving, cooling that an average American does in a year. $5,000 in the bank produces more carbon than flying back and forth across the country. So we need these banks to start acting responsibly, and we need it. Well, the IPCC said, we're in the last act of this drama unless we stand up and move fast. That's one of the things that Third Act is really about.
And finally, Dipney Bhatnagar, I want to ask you about another major story out of Mozambique, the recent death of the popular rapper, the cultural icon, Azagaya, just 38 years old, inspired so many with his music, singing about injustice, about mistreatment of people by authorities, poverty, social injustice, climate change, his death sparking protests in Mozambique, which authorities have violently suppressed. Your piece just came out in Arts Everywhere headlined the death of a Mozambican rapper and revolutionary. As we go out of this discussion, tell us about Azagaya.
Thank you for playing his music. You know, I was at what turned out to be Azagaya's last public concert in December of 2022 in Maputo City. And, you know, we were talking earlier about Cyclone Freddy and the climate impacts that are already happening. And of course, there's multiple interrelated crises that people in Mozambique are facing. 60% of the people do not have access to electricity. The Human Development Index is so low. In a context like this, someone like Azagaya, a revolutionary, a rapper, uses his love for hip hop and rap to bring these messages of injustice, but also hope to the youth. And, you know, Bill was so beautifully talking about about mobilizing older people. What Azagaya has managed to do is to ignite the youth, not just in Mozambique, but in the Portuguese-speaking world. Unfortunately, all of his music is in Portuguese. But it's so beautiful, the way that he ignited young minds, and he passed away less than 2 weeks ago. But what has happened in Mozambique since then has been an absolute travesty, because what we have seen is the youth being ignited and mourning and coming onto the streets in a place where it isn't easy to protest on the streets. I'm so glad these protests are happening in D.C., Portland, all over in the U.S. In Mozambique, we do not have the right to just come onto the streets, like in Egypt, Amy, which you spoke about. And, you know, when we were in Egypt at COP27, at the climate negotiations last year, we said no climate justice without human rights. And that rings true in Mozambique today, because there was an authorized march on Saturday where the youth wanted to come on the streets and mourn publicly the loss of their cultural icon, their revolutionary. And the police responded with brutality and tear gas and assaults and arrests. My own partner got hit in the back with a tear gas cartridge. And why is this important? As the crises deepen, people are going to get more and more incensed. The youth is going to get more and more incensed. And we need cultural icons like Azagaya. We need space. We need constructive ways for people to get involved, to be able to organize, to oppose the injustices that are happening. And the powerful know that. The government elites, the corporate elites across the world, they know that people power is what is going to change things, which is why they come out with this brutality and fight back and hit people and you know, throw tear gas on people. But the people of Mozambique, they have shown, the people in Maputo, in Beira, which is where Cyclone Idai in 2019 created the most damage, they went on the streets on Saturday and they mourned their cultural icon's death. And they showed that people power, even in a place like Mozambique, is going to be strong. And that is what we need if we are going to confront the crises that are coming. Because the crises are coming and the crises are deepening. So in a place like Mozambique, we need to be prepared not just how do we stop the crisis, but how are we actually going to deal with it, and how are we going to ignite people, and how are we going to use people power to push back all of these elites and all of this brutality.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Dipti Bhatnagar, Friends of the Earth Mozambique, Bill McKibben of 350.org and Third Act, and Ben Jealous, now Executive Director of the Sierra Club. And we're going to go out with Azagaya, his birth name, Edson da Luz. He took on Azagaya after an African spear. Stay with us.
Eu falo de povo para povo, porque eu sou povo e tu és povo. Usamos a mesma linguagem. Quando tu falas, eu te ouço. Quando eu falo, tu me ouves. Partilhamos as mesmas dores. Se te cansares pedir favores, então venha para a marcha. Tu que és mal pago, mas tu falas no trabalho. Tu que não és pago, recebes bolas no trabalho. Sim, tu que és humilhado por não teres ido à escola. Ninguém percebe que tiveste que pegar cedo no trabalho. Tu que pagas impostos, ficas sem nada nos bolsos. Tu que fazes dirigentes engordarem como porcos. Tu que não percebes economia nem política. Dizem que o país desenvolve, mas no teu prato não vês comida. Tu que serás lembrado só nas próximas eleições. E verás o candidato em helicópteros e aviões. Tu que vieste para a cidade à procura de sustento. Porque no campo a agricultura não dura sem investimento. Tu que apertas com os teus filhos num quarto de dependência. Acordas cedo, dormes tarde, a lutar
de independência. To March by Azagaya. He died March 9th in his home country of Mozambique. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue to mark the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, we look now at how the mainstream U.S. media helped to pave the way for war by uncritically amplifying the lies of the Bush administration, for example, around weapons of mass destruction, while silencing voices of dissent. In 2003, the media watchdog group FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, published a report titled, "In Iraq Crisis, Networks Are Megaphones for Official Views." The report found in the weeks leading up to the invasion, the nation's four top nightly news programs interviewed 267 current or former government or military officials. Just one of them expressed skepticism or opposition to the war. In a moment, we'll be joined by the longtime media critic Norman Solomon. But first, let's turn to an excerpt of the documentary War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, produced by the Media Education Foundation, based on Norm Solomon's book of the same name.
We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun, that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
As Americans, we like to think that we're not subjected to propaganda from our own government. Certainly that we're not subjected to propaganda that's trying to drag the country into war. That's in the case of setting the stage for the invasion of Iraq.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
There is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Botulin, VX, sarin, nerve agent.
Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda. Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Terrorism. Cyber attacks.
Nuclear program.
Biological weapons.
Cruise missiles, ballistic missiles.
Chemical and biological weapons.
Iraq has weapons of mass destruction.
President Bush has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Tony Blair has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Donald Rumsfeld has said Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. Richard Butler has said they do. The United Nations has said they do. The experts have said they do. Iraq says they don't. You can choose who you want to believe.
The war propaganda function in the United States is finely tuned, it's sophisticated, and most of all, it blends into the media terrain.
The White House says it can prove that Saddam Hussein does have weapons of mass destruction, claiming it has solid evidence.
The White House insisted again today it does have solid evidence.
It's necessary to provide a drumbeat media echo effect.
They might fight dirty using weapons of mass destruction, chemical, biological,
anthrax, smallpox,
dirty bomb,
Iraq Al-Qaeda connection.
Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda share the same goal. Both of them want to see Americans dead.
And I was very struck by the acceptance, the tone of most of the media coverage as the sabers were rattled, as the invasion of Iraq gradually went from possible to probable to almost certain.
President essentially giving Saddam 48 hours to get out of Dodge. War now seems all but inevitable.
Short of a bullet to the back of his head or he leaves the country, war is inexorable.
Well, I think that's exactly right. War is inevitable, and it is approaching inexorably.
Is war with Iraq inevitable right now?
I think it's 95% inevitable.
You, at this point, right now, tonight, don't see any other option but war.
Do you?
I'm asking you, Ambassador.
I agree. I don't think there's a viable option for the administration at this point. We're way too far out front in this.
Send us over there, guys. Let's get on with it. Let's get it over with.
Showdown Iraq. If America goes to war, turn to MSNBC and the experts.
And in many ways, the U.S. news media were equal partners with the officials in Washington and on Capitol Hill in setting the agenda for war.
We'll take you there. MSNBC.
And although it's called the liberal media, one has a great deal of difficulty finding an example of major media outlets in their reporting challenging the way in which the agenda setting for war is well underway.
We've got generals, and if you ask them about the prospects for war with Iraq, they think it is almost certain.
Pay no heed to the peaceniks and the left-wing rock stars. They've had their 15 minutes of fame.
These people are essentially useless. They are reflexively opposed to war. It's a principled position, but it's the wrong position, and you can't take them seriously as a strategic voice.
We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up.
And when that reporting is so much a hostage of official sources, that's when you have a problem.
U.S. officials tell CNN, Bush officials says that analysts say.
Pentagon officials tell us.
According to U.S. intelligence.
Often we're encouraged to believe that officials are the ones who make news.
U.S. officials say that these officials here at the White House tell us.
They are the ones who should be consulted to understand the situation.
I just pull these two things out. I've laundered them so you can't really tell what I'm talking about because I don't want the Iraqis to know what I'm talking about. But trust me.
If history's any guide, the opposite is the case. The officials blow smoke and cloud reality rather than clarify.
We will, in fact, be greeted as liberators.
The notion that it will take several hundred thousand U.S. troops are wildly off the mark.
So the money's going to come from Iraqi oil revenue, as everyone has said. They think it's going to be something like $2 billion this year. They think it might be something like 15, 12 next year.
We seek peace. We strive for peace.
Those last words, George W. Bush, weeks before the U.S. invaded Iraq 20 years ago. An excerpt from the documentary War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinging Us to Death. It's based on a book by the same name by our next guest, Norman Solomon, executive director of the Institute for Policy for Public Accuracy, co-founder of RootsAction.org. His forthcoming book, titled War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Your thoughts on this 20th anniversary, Norman Solomon, because so many of the voices and faces we see in this documentary, so many of the commentators on television and the hosts are the same today.
Very much. In the mass media, being pro-war is portrayed as objective. Being anti-war is portrayed as being biased. And very much so, the same media outlets and often the same people who lied, teamed up with the U.S. government to convey complete distortions to stampede the United States into war on Iraq 2 decades ago. These are the same media outlets that are, in the last few days, telling us what it all means. And it reminds us, I think, of something that George Orwell said. He said, those who control the past control the future. Those who control the present control the past. He was alluding to the fight over history that's so important because when it is rendered in a distorted way, whether in real time, you know, journalism is supposed to be the first draft of history. In the U.S. mass media, it's a distorted draft. Or in retrospect, it's also prefigurative. And I think an example is how 20 years ago, actually a little more than that, right after 9/11, President George W. Bush said, either you're with us or you're with the terrorists. And that was amplified, accepted, embraced by the U.S. mass media. Now, in the last year, we're hearing from the current president, either you're with us or you're with the Russians. Now, of course, what happened at 9/11 was horrible. It was a crime against humanity. The terrorists did a terrible, horrible thing, just as the Russians invading Ukraine have been doing a terrible thing. At the same time, I think we have to acknowledge that, as the saying goes, this is not really a Manichaean world. We can't just simply divide the world into good or bad. And here's an example. Our own president, President Joe Biden, tells us that the world is divided in between those who believe in human rights and those who don't. This is the guy who fist bumped the leader of Saudi Arabia as that country continued to slaughter people with U.S. government help in Yemen. So these are fictitious narratives 20 years ago, now, that support U.S. militarism.
I want to go back to 2003. Legendary TV host Phil Donahue fired from his primetime MSNBC talk show during the run-up to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. The problem wasn't his ratings, but rather his views. An internal MSNBC memo warned Donahue was a difficult public face for NBC in a time of war, providing a, quote, home for liberal anti-war agenda at the same time that our competitors are waving the flag at every opportunity. Well, in 2013, Democracy Now! Spoke to Phil Donahue about his firing.
I think what happened to me, the biggest lesson, I think, is the how corporate media shapes our opinions and our coverage. This was a decision, my decision, the decision to release me, came from far above. This was not an assistant program director who decided to separate me from MSNBC. They were terrified of the anti-war voice, and that is not an overstatement. Anti-war voices were not popular. And if you're General Electric, you certainly don't want an anti-war voice on a cable channel that you own. Donald Rumsfeld's your biggest customer. So, by the way, I had to have two conservatives on for every liberal. I could have Richard Perle on alone, but I couldn't have Dennis Kucinich on alone. I was considered two liberals. It really is funny almost when you look back on how the management was just frozen by the anti-war voice. We were scolds. We weren't patriotic. American people disagreed with us. We weren't good for business.
So that was Phil Donahue talking about what happened to him 20 years ago. Norman Solomon, if you could take it from there and also talk about the double standard and how grief is covered. That's grief of those within the U.S. and U.S. allied countries versus the grief of everyone else. And also, your last book was War Made Easy. Your new book will be called War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Expand on that.
Yes, so much of this is about corporate power in media, the interlocks with the military-industrial complex, the huge amounts of money that continue to be made by supplying the Pentagon with the tools of the murderous trade of ongoing war. Anybody who thinks the lies and the profiteering from slaughter is just 20 years ago is mistaken. What we're seeing now is a more invisibility of war, just as profitable, if not more so, massive arms sales to arm Ukraine, to build nuclear weapons in a new generation, as it's called, and the air war that has largely supplanted the ground troops. Remember 10, 15 years ago, so many U.S. troops on the ground. There are now, more than ever in many respects, two tiers of grief from the U.S. mass media and those on Capitol Hill in the White House. Grief that matters and grief that doesn't. The grief that matters is those of Americans who suffer, the designated allies, such as Ukraine citizens. Well, of course, we should empathize and portray the suffering of everyone who endures war. War is a crime against humanity. But what we're not getting is that other tier of grief being conveyed. As a matter of fact, 20 years ago to today, the victims of U.S. war, financed by or bombs dropped on these people, they are virtually non-people in the U.S. mass media. You can scour for thousands of pages of the congressional record and not find any empathy, any connection in human terms. And so, really, Amy, I think when we get down to what's really underneath so much of this is the tacit nationalism or explicit nationalism and racism and arrogance that says that some human beings really, really matter, which is correct, and other human beings really don't matter, especially if they're being slaughtered by U.S. weaponry that is so profitable.
And finally, Norman Solomon, the coverage of the anti-war movement, bringing out the voices of those who are opposed to war, looking for a just peace.
Yes, this is part of the mythology of mass media, that we live in this land of the free and home of the brave. And yet, when push comes to shove, we only get from the corporate media glorification or even substantial coverage of anti-war protesters when they're in Moscow. And we should support the anti-war protesters in Moscow. We should also support and publicize and really convey to the American people the messaging of anti-war protesters and a deep reservoir of anti-war belief in this country.
Norman Solomon, I want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, co-founder of RootsAction.org, author of War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. The film of that same title, War Made Easy, is produced by the Media Education Foundation. His forthcoming book is titled War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. A belated happy birthday to Tammy Warnoff. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a digital fellow. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresina, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Ndura, Sam Alkoff, Tamer Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen Honey, Masood, Sanji Lopez, our Executive Director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell. I'm Amy Goodman.
The annual Sled Island Music and Arts Festival is back, June 21st to the 25th. Experience 5 days of music, comedy, film, and art in diverse venues across Calgary, Alberta. featuring genre-defying indie alternative artist Barty Strange as guest curator, garage rock chameleons Osays, Chicago-based indie rock three-piece Dead, Latin folk innovator Helada Negro, Toronto's viral hip-hop sensation Akintoye, gothic folk artist Emma Ruth Rundle, alternative R&B hip-hop artist Amindi, and plus many more. There's 150 artists yet to be announced. Check out the current lineup and get your passes and tickets at sledisland.com.